Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Wesley Mission Victoria and broadcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves and it's a pleasure to host another program in the award-winning series of Listen to Older Voices. This is part one of a three-part program on the life and times of 98-year-old Elise Hatful. As we take a journey together through Elise's life, you'll come to understand a little of this remarkably energetic and positive woman. To reach the age of 98 means that you will have probably experienced some of the best and worse that life can throw up. And over these three programs, we discover this is indeed the case with Elise. Born in London, Elise has many memories of her early years. She had three sisters and a brother, all younger than she. Elise recalls some of the difficulties a working class family faced in this period. But when her mother died of TB, she took over looking after her brothers and sisters. And then her father died about 3 years later, just as World War II started. But this is not a story of doom and gloom, as exemplified by the great stories Elise shares, including stories of how everyone knew their neighbours and how neighbourhoods were real communities. But let's start at the beginning. Here I am, talking with Elise Hatful. Elise, thank you for inviting me into your home. Could I start off by asking you, when were you born? What year?
1919.
So you have lived a very long and wonderful life.
I'm 98.
98. Mm-hmm. That's a very good innings, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
My mother was very convenient. I was born on the 19th of January. So I'm 19-1-1919.
That's very hard to forget. Whereabouts were you born, Elise?
I was born in the London Hospital in Mile End Road, London. It's on the outskirts of London.
Is it? Yes, right. Part of the East End?
Yeah, in the East End, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. By Whitechapel and Hackney on the other side. And, well, it was a very busy East working class area. Very busy.
What can you recall of those years?
I can remember that my father worked for Whitbread Brewery and he had a horse and cart sort of thing where they used to deliver the barrels of beer. And I think he had a four-in-hand horse that he used to drive around all the breweries.
Right.
And I can remember, I think my earliest memory is that he stopped outside our house and he put me on the back of this big horse. I was only very small, so I was frightened out of my life.
And those brewery horses would have been very big, wouldn't
they? Yes, they were.
Yes.
They were the great big horses. But that's, I think, is about my earliest memory.
What sort of person was Dad?
He was a very kind and considerate sort of person, had a great sense of humour, and he was very helpful in the house and sort of did odd jobs around. Much older than my mother, and I was born when I think he must have been in his 50s or something. Mm. So I can't remember what sort of a trade he had. But he used to work in the building sites, and I suppose he was just a labourer in the building sites. But because in those days, in the Depression, there was no work, so you did what you could, and that was that.
Yes, you were born into a very bad era in that way, weren't you? The Great Depression was a terrible period.
Yes, so whatever was going, then he would get into, but quite often there was no work at all.
No.
So And my mother used to, was very sort of busy. There were five of us in the family, and she was a very busy person, of course, and a typical London house with three ups and three down sort of thing. And very long garden, and Dad was quite good at gardening, and we had rows of raspberries growing along the fences, and blackcurrant bushes, and goodness knows what. And so we used to have our own harvest at times. And sometimes you used to curse it because, can I go out? Yes, when you've picked the fruit. But my mother used to, when she could get the sugar and what have you, would make jam and what have you. So we always had jam around the place. We used to grow beans and runner beans and rhubarb and lots of special flowers, sunflowers and delphiniums and goodness knows what. So we were quite sort of colourful around the place at times.
What do you remember about your mum?
My mother was only 49 when she died. She had TB.
Oh, terrible.
And she had that for some years before she died, sort of thing. So, and of course, TB needs feeding in that you need fresh air and good food. Well, there was no much fresh air around, and there was no good food around.
No.
So, and being a mother, she would always feed her family before she fed herself.
Of course.
And that, of course, didn't help. And I think she was only 47 when she died.
How old would you have been, do you recall?
I was about 21, I think, then, when she died.
So, right. So that didn't make it any less awful for you?
No. So, and as I say, there were five of us, three sisters and one brother.
Right.
And they were all younger than me. I was the eldest of the crew. And it was a big blow, of course, when she was taken, but my dad died 3 years later, so I was left to look after the crew and run the house. And by that time, it was wartime, so that wasn't making it any easier.
Well, before we get to the war years, because there's quite a few years before between you being born and the Second World War starting, being the oldest child, you were probably helping looking after the children from a very young age then.
Oh, yes, well, we all did. Looked after one another sort of thing.
Right.
You had to. I can remember washing days, you know. Big hard piles of washing and everybody had to do something. We had a old copper in the corner that outside, and that had to be fueled, and that was where you got all your hot water because there was no such thing as hot water.
Oh, no.
Only in the kettles and in the copper. And, you know, turning the mangle, those great big mangles, and you had to turn those, and the kids used to do that and sort out the washing.
Because apart from being in a working class area, that period of time, the early part of the 20th century, there were no modern conveniences, were there?
Oh, nothing, no.
I mean, cooking, was that on an open wood stove?
A stove, yes. We did later in life have a gas cooker, but otherwise it was just a open fire sort of thing with an oven by the side of the fire, so you had to keep the fire stoked when you were cooking. Pots and pans were always on the top of the stove with always something cooking.
Of course.
When we could get what we could get.
Yes.
But otherwise, life, we had a very happy lifetime. We were very much a family, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
And also you knew your neighbours, whereas nowadays you don't know your neighbours. You know their cars. But in those days, you knew your neighbours.
That was very important, wasn't it?
Yes.
That connection with your neighbourhood.
Very much so. If somebody was sick, there was always somebody go and visit them and take them a pot of tea or whatever you could find for them. But there was always somebody there.
We talk about communities today, but back in when you were a young girl, it really was a community, wasn't it?
Oh, it was. You knew your neighbours.
Yes.
And but nowadays, as I say, you know their cars.
Yes.
I know across the road that the lady across the road, or all of them, they've got a white car, she's got a white car, she's got a black car.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't know them if I fell over them.
Yes.
But it's quite different. You don't know your neighbours nowadays.
And this is Listen to Older Voices. Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio. I'm Rob Greaves and I'm talking with Elise Hatfield. And Elise is recalling the days when the neighbours were really part of a community, with everyone not only knowing each other, but helping each other, unlike today.
You had to learn to do with very little.
Oh, yes, you made your own amusements.
Yes, that's where I was getting to.
You had a whip and a top that you used to play, marbles and hopscotch and dipping and things like that. You had a football. If you had a football, they were probably rags or papers done up in a ball and tied up.
Yes.
One big one was the Tin Can Copper Man, where you had a group and you all had to hide, and one person had to find you. And if they found you, then you went as the Tin Can Copper Man and what have you. But all sorts of games like that. There was no toys such as you see nowadays. But
did you miss not having toys?
No. You made your own amusement.
Yes.
Another, because there were no cars, so the streets were very safe.
Of course.
So we used to have skipping in the street. You'd have a rope right across the street from one curb to the other and two people turning and everybody lining up and you'd play skipping and things like that.
Right. What about school? You would have gone to school. What was that like?
That was very... we had about 50 in the class, I suppose. And some of the teachers were very strict. I can always remember that one teacher, this was in the junior school sort of thing, she was very strict old person, because we'd all get assembled in the class and be rabble and what have you. But as soon as she appeared, she'd come in and have a ruler and slap it on the desk and there was silence.
Ruled by fear.
And also, you often came out and got a slap with a ruler.
They weren't shy giving a bit of corporal punishment, were they?
No. No. Oh, no. If you were caught doing something or talking when you shouldn't or otherwise, out you got and hold your hand out and three slaps or whatever it was and off you went.
Did you manage to avoid getting the...
Oh, I suppose whacked. I avoided it. I got some at times.
Got some at times.
Mm. But I remember one class we were in, the teacher used to wear buttoned-up boots, but they weren't buttoned-up, they were hooked. You had to hook them buttons at the sort of the button-up. Get your hook round the button and pull it in the hole. It's in the side. And if you were good, you could hook the teacher's boots up for her. Favouritism.
Favouritism, oh yes. And I'm sure there were the teacher's favourites in the classroom.
Oh, there definitely were some teacher's favourites.
Yes. Was there any subjects that you really enjoyed?
In the junior school, I can't remember very much of that.
No,
at all.
Of course not.
But I did go to a central school.
Right.
And we had the usual reading, writing, arithmetic, but we also did French.
Oh,
some
nice.
Science. And we had some very good teachers there. I often think that those teachers were years ahead of what they were, sort of thing. They were very free and easy, and you could talk to the teachers. They were quite different to the primary school teachers. English history was the one that I surprised myself and the rest of the class and came top of the exams one year. Only 1 year, but...
it doesn't matter. You must have felt very good about that.
And then we had commercial. You did shorthand and typing in later years, 14 onwards, you did shorthand typing. So that used to be after the regular school hours.
Right.
And you finished school at 4 o'clock, or from 4 till 5 you'd be doing typing for half an hour. And you did shorthand during the course of the...
So how long did you stay at school for before you
I was 16 when I left school.
That was fairly old in those days, wasn't it? I thought people generally left at 13 or 14.
They did. But if you went to central school, as far as I can remember, if you stayed after 14 or 15, you got a grant from the government. And can't remember how much it was. It wasn't very much. But that sort of encouraged your parents to keep you at school, possibly because there wasn't that much work. You were kept at school.
Even so, I'm very intrigued because, as we've mentioned several times now, working class family, fairly poor area, poor economic period. I'm surprised that your parents, in that period of time, kept you at school, because most tried to get their kids to work to help with an income, but your parents were happy for you to be at school, were they?
My father was very much for education.
Right.
He was born in Stratford-on-Avon, and if I can remember rightly, they had to pay for school there, and I think he said it cost sixpence a week to go to school.
Goodness, okay.
So that when I... he encouraged us to stay at school, sort of thing. So, as I got a grant, that helped.
Of course.
But I suppose I used to walk for about 2 miles or 3 miles to school, because we couldn't afford... Being at a Church of England school, if you got a scholarship, you had to go to a Church of England school.
Of course.
And the nearest one was in Limehouse, and that was quite away from where we lived. Well, I was given a penny to go on the bus in the morning, but I had to walk home, and that was about 3 miles, I suppose, that I had to walk home from school.
And that was even in bad weather, wasn't it?
Yes, if it was bad weather, usually I could get... the maintenance man, I suppose. I don't know what you'd call him now, but he used to ring the bell and clean the school and what have you. You could go and ask him if you could borrow a penny and give him back later or something to get yourself home.
Yes.
Otherwise you'd walk home. We also had swimming lessons, but you had to pay for those. But that was only until you got into the 14, 15, 16 classes. It would have go out of the school. It was a very small school, and you'd go out of the school in a crocodile form and walk all about half a mile, I suppose, to the mile end where there were swimming pools, public ones, and there you'd have swimming lessons once a week. That's if you were... I'd paid your money, sort of thing.
Were you able to do swimming lessons?
Yes, I did. As a matter of fact, this is very interesting, which is going off the beam, but about 6 months ago, I suppose, I had a letter in a sort of documental form come, and it was from a nephew of mine, and he'd been looking through his father's papers, and found this certificate. So he said, I thought I'd send it back to the owner, and it was my swimming certificate.
Oh, for goodness sake. What a wonderful keepsake.
Yeah, after about 40 years, I suppose.
That must have brought back a lot of memories.
It did. Yes. It did, yeah. So
what did you do when you left school?
I got a job as a telephone operator at a clothing factory, which was just at the top of where I lived. And it was the plug-in telephone, you know, where all you had plugs.
Oh, plugs and cables and...
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, goodness me, yes.
I was there for a couple of years, I suppose.
Operator, can you help me? Help me if you please. Give me the right area code and the number that I need. My right or left up on the midnight flyer, singing like a summer breeze. I think she's somewhere down south, down about Baton Rouge. But I just can't remember no number, a number I can use. Directory don't have it, central done forgot it. Got to find a number to use. Trying to check out a number, trying to run down a line. Operator said that's privileged information and it ain't no business of mine. It's flooding down in Texas, the polls are out in Utah. Got to find a private line. She could be hanging around a steel mill, working in a house with blue lights, riding a getaway bus out of Portland, talking tonight. I don't know where she's going, I don't care where she's been, long as she's been doing it right.
Listen to older voices, the magic of memories.
Then got transferred to another part of their factory, which was over in Mayor Street, which was in Hackney. And it was good working for that company because they were Jewish. And they were strict Jews, so they didn't work on Saturday.
Oh, bonus for you, because most people had to, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
Oh, so it sounds like it was actually not a bad job.
No, it wasn't. It was quite a good job. And I was typing and what have you there. I didn't do very much shorthand, but it was mostly just typing and typing documents and all the rest of it.
And you were still living at home with...
Yeah, still living at home. Yes. Yeah. That, I suppose, lasted for a few years, and I got a few other odd jobs at different places for change of scenery.
That would have been taking you into the war years, then?
Yes, it was well into the war years, because this company that I worked at was Silverstone, a big company. Their job before the war was making soldiers' uniforms.
Right.
So, of course, during the war, we were very busy making soldiers' uniforms and what have you. And then later after the war, they even made cricket outfits for the test matches that used to come from Australia over to England.
Oh, goodness me. Yeah. That's quite a turnabout of from war-type uniforms to sporting uniforms.
Yeah.
War and peace.
They still made their uniforms.
Still make them.
Still made them, yes.
Yeah.
But as I say, they were used to make ordinary uniforms but they were the high class ones.
Mm-hmm.
They were always at the tailors in Savile Road and places like that.
Mm.
Lots of these Jewish tailors would be those that sit on the table, cross-legged, hand-stitching.
Yes, I've heard about that.
Mm.
What do you remember about the early war years? You obviously, you were old enough because you were working to understand what was happening around you. Was it a fearful period?
We had all had gas masks.
Right.
And they put out a request for different organisations to round to different houses to see that people had got their gas masks and knew how to fit them and all the rest of it. And I and a friend used to go around to different people to make sure they got their gas masks. We had them in little boxes, and you had to take that wherever you went.
Mm.
You had to take your gas mask with you. When they had different lectures on different types of gas that would be used and all the terrible things that were going to happen.
Join Elise and I next week for some more of her story, which includes more of the war years and of the Blitz, how she met her husband-to-be, Stan Hatfull, by correspondence, and why it really didn't almost happen. Look, all this and much more next week in part two of The Life and Times of Elise Hatfull on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is funded from the Commonwealth and State Government's Home and Community Care Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.